Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. With the Super Bowl on Sunday and the college football playoffs concluding just a few weeks ago, millions of fans have had plenty of sports to watch and bet on. Since the federal ban on sports betting was lifted, billions of dollars have been wagered. From casinos to restaurants to kiosks and grocery stores, and of course on your phone, you can pretty much place a bet anytime, anywhere. But this has come with concerns over regulations and how its impact on states where it's legal. Joining us to discuss the sports betting boom is Mark Gottlieb, Executive Director of Public Health Advocacy Institute. Welcome, Mark.
Good morning.
Also with us is Richard Daynard, the professor of law at Northeastern and the president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute. Richard, thanks for joining us for All Sides.
My pleasure.
So your team compares sports betting to the tobacco industry. Richard, you were one of the first people to file lawsuits against big tobacco. So can you talk to me about the parallels? How do you see the sports betting industry and the tobacco industry parallel?
Well, it turns out they're quite similar. In both cases, the industry has actually designed their product to be addictive. They've designed their product basically to entrap their customers. In the case of the tobacco industry, they changed they actually changed the way that the tobacco was prepared after it's harvested. It's prepared and cured in a different way to make it inhalable. In the 19th century, it generally had not been inhalable. And then by the later part of the 20th century, the companies were busy, and we have lots of documents from them. They were busy trying to make sure that you got exactly the right amount of nicotine from each puff of the cigarette, because you get, too much nicotine, inhalable at that point. It becomes apparently quite revolting, but you get too little nicotine, you don't get hooked, or you don't stay hooked. So they get the sweet spot in the middle. What's the analogy with sports betting, online sports betting? Online sports betting actually has nothing to do with the sports betting that people were accustomed to, that I think the Supreme Court and the state legislatures, by and large, were expecting to see, which is, just simply an online version of, some ability to bet on the results of a game, or in the case of a horse race, bet on, which horse is going to come in for, win, place, or show in the fourth or fifth or the sixth race. No, that's not at all what the model is. It's what one thought it was going to be. The model actually comes from slot machines in Las Vegas. That's the model. And it's a model to keep you in action without any sense, any relationship, any more relationship to anything that's really happening out in the real world that you care about, at least. No more relationship there than you have at a slot machine when you're, betting the next one. Well, okay, do I think the next one is really the one that's going to win for me? And the reason is that the stuff you're betting on, these in-game micro bets, are about things that nobody has ever bet on before. For example, in a baseball game, is the next pitch going to be slower or faster than 94.5 miles per hour? So it's not because people don't walk and say, I'm really sure. I have real hunches to what the 37th pitch is going to, speed of the 37th pitch. No, I mean, these are just excuses to keep pushing the buttons, because as my colleague Mark articulated a while ago, I think it's still true, what they're going for, what they get you going for is not the dough, but the dopamine.
Right.
You're not actually focused on what is the bet, what's my chance of winning it, what do I know about this? No. You just want to keep hitting the thing because you keep wanting the shots of dopamine like another. It would be presumably somewhat analogous to taking your next puff, very addicted, or becoming addicted smoker to take the next puff of their their cigarette.
And Mark Gottlieb, what have you found whenever you look at things like all of the apps where you can place these bets? Is that the more addictive part, even than, going and playing on one of the kiosks at a bar? Is it because it's in your hand? Yeah.
Yeah, it's almost quaint in terms of the types of bets that can be wagered in person or at a kiosk compared to the blistering speed of gambling action on your phone. And as Professor Daynard was alluding to, this is about keeping people in action at a high rate of speed to provide these dopamine response to the reward systems of the brain. And it is an absolutely fundamentally different product than what most people think about, who are considering maybe, I'll sign up for one of these apps and place a bet on the Super Bowl. That would be fine. Who's going to win? Is it going to be a three-peat for is it going to be a three-peat for Kansas City? Is Philadelphia finally going to get a Super Bowl after so many years? That's not what it's about. It's about these little micro bets, and it's the result of a deal between the gambling companies and the leagues and AI providers that create these bets in microseconds and push them based on all of the information they have about each user and what their proclivities are for gambling to get them to bet as quickly as possible. And this is targeted largely towards young males in our society, which is the demographic where that seems to be paying off the biggest dividends for the gambling companies.
Now, your team has launched a series of lawsuits, specifically suing like DraftKings, a popular mobile sports betting app, but you're suing them for deceptive advertising. Can you tell us why you decided to start there with advertising?
Well, because the advertising they were doing, at least in every market that they were entering, including ours in Massachusetts in 2023, was so extraordinarily deceptive in our view that it seemed like this would be a good place to start. There's a lot of aspects to how these companies create a threat to public health and are harming public health and individuals and families. But you got to start somewhere. And so this was a $1,000 sign-up bonus for this company for all new users in a new market, which Massachusetts had just opened up. You had to, in order to get your $1,000 bonus, you had to make an initial deposit when you signed up of $5,000. You had to bet $25,000 on certain types of bets over a limited period of time. And even if you did that, you're not going to get $1,000. You just get credits for more gambling. And of course, that's what they want you to do. They want you to stay in action because that is going to condition the user's brain to be more likely to, unfortunately, get a gambling disorder, a real addiction, which since 2013, we've known is the only type of addiction like that affects the brain like a substance, like a chemical, but nothing is ingested. It's all through the dopamine response, through the activity.
Now, Richard, we can remember decades ago seeing advertising for cigarettes all the time, making it look very cool, all, ads everywhere for it. And those are all gone for the most part. So is that your goal with your lawsuits? You want to change the way these sports betting apps are advertising?
Well, with respect to the lawsuit, and the lawsuit, this is really just the beginning, but we certainly want to change the way they're advertising. That this is an easy first step. I mean, easy in principle, because
You're going to use
if
air quotes around easy. Yeah.
exactly because if this is if this guy if this promotion isn't deceptive, then there is no such thing as a deceptive, promotion. This is the poster child for deceptive promotions. So we clearly want to get them to stop doing this because this is, one of the ways, principal way they have recruited people, into their, onto their apps and onto their addictive product. It's, but it's simply a start. I mean, if this was achieved, sure, of course. But we have to, proceed on from there. So we're also, there'll be, we're looking at, other, lawsuits, involving individuals, for example, who've been, badly harmed. I mean, there are a wide variety of, so there's lots of misbehavior here and lots of harm that has resulted from it. But we're also working on, with legislators who want to do something to keep this problem, because the problem goes beyond, way beyond the marketing. The problem is the product itself, that the marketing is deceptive. It gets you into the product, but it's the product that swallows you in, that traps you in there. And then once you're in there, I mean, the companies extract all your money. And when I say extract all your money, I mean all your money, for the for the people who are addicted, all the money they can lay their hands on, legally, illegally, in violation of, the trust that people have put in them, their families, significant others, so forth. It's the product that
And
really
Amy,
the
I
real
just to add
market.
that, in addition to that, we have a very high rate of suicides among problem gamblers as well, which is very unfortunate. And I think those numbers are, we may see increases as the explosion in sports betting has affected more and more people. And we're not against sports gambling, and I think people can have fun, and it can maybe even enhance the enjoyment of sports if it's done right. But these problems can be these excuse me these products can be rolled out much more safely, and that's what we're hoping to achieve through legislation and litigation.
This is
And
all
to
All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the sports betting boom in Ohio and elsewhere with Mark Gottlieb, Executive Director of the Public Health Policy Institute, and Richard Daynard, a professor of law at Northeastern and president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute. I wanted to move on to the money a little bit because you mentioned the money from the actual individual people who are losing money in the gaming, but there's a lot of money to be made for states. That's why so many states have signed on to legalize this sports betting. And in fact, in his most recent budget, Ohio Governor Mike DeWine proposed increasing the sports gaming tax from 20% to 40%. So he's doubling it. There's real money on the table here for states to make money. So maybe they want it to be safe for their citizens, but they don't that but they want to make money from it, right, Mark?
absolutely. I mean, that's the only reason this is around, is that states are looking for revenue from gambling. One thing that a point that I wanted to make about that is that when we're talking about the revenue to the states, and we're talking about all the money that the companies are making, all of it comes from public losses. So we're just looking to transfer wealth from people who are perhaps suffering from a mental health disorder with a gambling addiction, and exploiting that. I'm not sure that most legislators and even governors really understand the fundamental nature of the products that are now being marketed and sold using AI from the online gambling companies. And I think a better understanding of that might inform how these products are regulated, how they're taxed. Taxing can be a double-edged sword, because on the one hand, it might make it less appealing for some people to use it, and we saw that with increasing tobacco taxes for many years. On the other hand, it can create a secondary addiction, which is an addiction by the government to that additional revenue. And they may not be as willing to impose guardrails to protect their citizens if it might put some of that additional income at risk. So there's a lot to be considered when raising the taxes on online gambling.
Yeah, I want to make a couple of points about that. First, raising the taxes on gambling won't change anything that the customers see. It's simply a question of between the, gambling companies, DraftKings, FanDuel, whoever, and the state. Do we let them keep, how much of this money do we let the casinos keep, or do we take? And the states obviously, can take, pretty much as they want. I think some states take as much as 50%. There's no reason why any other state should take less than 50%. You're just handing the extra money over to the gambling company. Why are you doing it? And then where is the money coming from? The money is coming from the citizens of the state. They're being essentially being taxed. Most of the as the history with gambling, even before the online gambling, is that while only maybe a small percentage, probably not 1 or 2%, probably 10% or something, even though a small percentage of the customers, of the total number of customers, are heavily addicted and losing their shirts and running into real problems, that's something like 50% of their income. So that the model, their model, profit model, in other words, if you're facing Wall Street as opposed to facing the regulators or the public, they say, yeah, well, we have this great model here, because we're getting all this money, out of these people. So you're squeezing it out of these individuals. Now, I have a much better idea for a state that wants to raise revenue from its citizens. Rather than getting 20% of what they spend, or even 40% of what they spend, there's a way to get 100% of what they spend, which is called a tax. But this is equally a tax on the citizens, but it's a tax, the majority of which, of the money of which goes to some company, probably not in Ohio, that's getting it and distributing it to their shareholders. So there's, this is not a very good way to raise money. You're not, your citizens aren't getting anything for this, at least many of them aren't. The and what they're some are getting some fun and games, but a huge number of the large number of the citizens are getting their lives destroyed. And to underline a point Mark just made, of the people who are addicted to gambling, 50% of them, 50% consider suicide, 20% attempt suicide.
Well, we're going to talk about it more, of what it means to Ohio. A member of the Ohio Casino Control Commission is coming on in the next segment. I want to say thank you to Richard Daynard, professor of law at Northeastern and president of the Public Health Advocacy Institute. Thanks for being here, Richard.
A pleasure.
And thanks to Mark Gottlieb, executive director of the Public Health Advocacy Institute. Thanks for joining us today, Mark.
Thank you.
And coming up, as I said, we will talk to the Ohio Casino Control Commission. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Sports betting has been legal in Ohio for just about 2 years. Monday night, Governor DeWine announced the state budget with a major change for sports betting companies. He plans on doubling the gambling tax from 20% to 40%. Here's what he had to say about sports betting companies and how they impact Ohioans.
They are getting Ohioans to give them, lose massive amounts of money every year. And it seems to me only just and fair that some of the stadiums be paid for by them, or a portion of it, And it seems also fair that our young people, who, you know, they are targeting, will get some benefit by being able to play sports.
Joining us now for more on sports betting in Ohio is Andromeda Morrison, General Counsel for the Ohio Casino Control Commission. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Amy.
So Governor DeWine's decision to increase the sports betting tax is significant. If it passes, it'll be a real amount of money. What did the Casino Control Commission think of that announcement?
So, Amy, one of the great things about my job, as challenging as it is that the commission is an implementer of policy. We are not a policymaker. So the governor and the General Assembly, whatever they decide the appropriate tax rate is, our job is to make sure that the companies are abiding by Ohio law and making sure that the offerings that they're providing are meeting the policy goals and expectations of the General Assembly and the governor.
Oh, so is your job to collect the money, basically?
We don't collect the money, but we do provide assistance to the Ohio Department of Taxation, who, of course, collects the funds from the operators. And we'll do, our own verification to ensure that the revenue that those companies are reporting are accurate.
Okay. So maybe why don't you tell us what the Ohio Casino Control Commission does? So you're not making policy, you're not collecting the taxes, but then what is happening?
Yeah, so the Ohio Casino Control Commission is a state entity who's charged with ensuring the integrity of a lot of different gambling and gaming products in Ohio, including sports betting and the four land-based casinos. And so our job is to promulgate the administrative rules and to ensure compliance with those rules, with Ohio statutes, and ensure that companies that are offering these types of products in Ohio are doing so in full compliance with Ohio law. And so we do that through licensing, making sure that those companies are vetted for financial suitability, criminal background, the individuals who work for them have suitable background and character to be engaged in that kind of business. We do that through compliance, regulatory compliance, showing, making sure that they're dotting the I's and crossing the T's, so to speak. Through enforcement of the law on the criminal side, we are a law enforcement agency and so can investigate violations of Ohio's criminal code as it relates to gambling implementation, and also by providing problem gambling services to those who may need that assistance.
Okay. And we're going to talk about the gambling problem services later in the show, but I can visualize how the Ohio Casino Control Commission can regulate a casino, brick and mortar casino. What impact do you have on these sports betting apps that have just become more and more prevalent? Lots of people are just using their phones to make the bets.
Thanks, Amy. So it's a full regulatory program just like at the casinos. It's just done remotely through online means. So whereas we may have staff physically located at some of the casinos, what we have is staff who can remote access into apps, who can do technology reviews, can ensure that technology for the backgrounds they use to, for example, verify identities of individuals who are signing up for those apps are robust and meet all of those requirements. So it's the same process. It's the same manner in which we regulate casino gaming, just done in a remote through the internet manner.
Okay. So I'm sure that your organization has gotten busier in the past 2 years since sports gaming was added, correct?
Immensely busier.
Yes. Is that an understatement?
Yeah. Probably the understatement for me of the year.
Yes. So in 2023, during the first year of betting, Ohio users bet more than $7.6 billion, and that resulted the state collected $133 million in taxes. So, that's no small chunk of change. In the previous budget, where did those taxes go?
So it's interesting. So the governor's plan to raise the tax rate from 20% to 40% is actually the second time that he's been proposing a doubling of the tax rate. When sports gaming first became live in Ohio, the tax rate was 10%. Last budget, it was raised to 20%, and now we see that increase. So you will see some differences in the number for that first year of revenue reporting to show the difference between 6 months at 10% and the remaining 6 months at 20%. But in all cases, up until now, those funds go for two purposes. They go to support education, K-12 education, in a manner determined by the General Assembly, and the rest is retained in a problem gambling fund that the Casino Control Commission uses to fund programs in order to assist Ohioans who may need that assistance.
Okay, so as of right now, part of it goes to K-12 education, part of it goes to problem gambling, and then the governor's proposing that if this additional doubling happens, then that's when he says that the money is going to go to helping build new stadiums or do stadium improvements and youth sports. Is that your understanding? Yes?
That's my understanding. I haven't read the budget language precisely to see exactly where they're drawing some of those different program initiatives, but that's my understanding.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about sports betting with Andromeda Morrison, General Counsel for the Ohio Casino Control Commission. So let's talk a little bit about regulations. It's a complex industry. There are qualifications needed for an Ohioan to be able to place a sports bet in the first place. What needs to happen in order for an Ohioan to make a bet?
If we're talking about online, that Ohioan will need to create an account with a licensed sports gaming operator here in the state. And part of that account creation process will be a what we're going to call KYC, Know Your Customer requirements. And this is where the sports betting companies must prove the identity of the individual who wants to make bets. And that is the primary manner in which the state is assured that individuals who are betting are who they say they are and not participating in any of the exclusion programs that they could sign up for, and also are of legal age to make those wagers, which in Ohio is 21 and older. The companies also have to use a geolocation company to verify that the location in which the bet is being made is within the border of the state of Ohio. So you have to meet all of the age and identity requirements, and you have to be located in Ohio in order to make a bet here.
Okay. Does the state get a lot of incidents of illegal betting? I mean, that's what you look for, right?
So there are reports that we get regularly of, I'm going to say, maybe discrepancies or unusual betting patterns. We have an integrity monitoring program where there are companies that we certify, and they monitor all wagering across these operators to monitor for changes in betting patterns, unusual changes in lines leading up to game markets. And those are things that we look at. We also get reports from the geolocation companies of perhaps people who are outside of Ohio who have tried to access the Ohio market. So we do get a wide variety of reports, and it keeps us pretty busy.
Yeah. So if Governor DeWine's additional doubling of the tax happens, will you hear from the sports betting companies? Will they say to you, like, I mean, they'll obviously lobby to Mike DeWine's office to stop this, I'm assuming. But will you hear from them about this?
I'm sure we will. We work with each of these companies on a daily basis, so it would be inevitable, I think, for them to not express their particular lobbying position. But again, they're going to spend most of their lobbying time with the General Assembly and the Governor's office.
Okay. So if you work with these companies on a daily basis, are you working with them saying, you know, we got a report that, you know, this thing is happening that's not supposed to happen, you need to fix it? Like,
Or patrons have come to us to tell us that there's a problem. We've asked them to look into it or to provide information as to why that patron is having difficulties. We're getting reports of, you know, users trying to access your site. Give us more information on that. So it's a lot of information sharing. And then, of course, we're doing regular regulatory compliance work. So that would include regular auditing, financial auditing. We're auditing their what I'm going to call their procedures. So they have to submit procedures to the commission that are approved of how they're going to handle various types of situations. What if a game is canceled? What if they're going to, how are they going to process voids? And so we need to make sure that they're following those approved procedures. We need to make sure that they're following requirements as it relates to advertising and all of the other things that go into that. So it's both getting information from the company, it's providing guidance and information to those companies, as well as doing all of those audits and compliance work to make sure that they are staying in full compliance.
Have you been with the Casino Commission for a while?
I think I have been with the commission for about 10 years.
10 years. Okay. So you were there before sports betting exploded.
It was, yes.
Okay. So I just was wondering your thoughts on the AI technology used, because the guests we had in the first segment were talking about, like, just betting on the outcome of a game is not the problem. It's all of the micro betting where you can bet on each individual play in a football game. Is the next play going to be a pass or a run? It's the micro betting is where it gets you. What is Ohio? Can Ohio regulate how much micro betting is happening?
So it's difficult because the General Assembly has expressly allowed for all of these different types of wagers to happen. I don't think the commission's in a position to prohibit these types of micro betting, but what we are in a position to do is to ensure that there are robust consumer protections in place so that if a company is offering micro betting, that they're doing so as responsibly as possible within the confines of what the General Assembly has allowed. Sports betting nationwide is such a new phenomenon. Mm-hmm. I mean, really, we're talking about the last 5 years and a huge growth of an industry that didn't exist. And now it has proliferated into, I think, now 38 or 39 different jurisdictions across the U.S. And so the opportunities that really are facing us collectively as a nation, I think, is in researching the impact of these offerings on various people, various segments of the population. And so some of the work that the commission is doing is funding research related to problem gambling or how sports betting companies are presenting information to consumers. And does that make a difference in the types of more risky or less risky wagers that they might be inclined to do? So there's a lot of opportunity for both the private industry and for government to focus on building out that research body so that there's better guidance and more policy decisions can be made by the General Assembly based on real data.
Mm-hmm. And some of the programs you mentioned a couple of times that the Casino Commission works with problem gambling programs. Time Out Ohio and Pause Before You Play. Are these am I saying the right names?
Yes, you are.
So can you tell me about these programs?
Sure. So the Time Out Ohio program actually predates sports betting. It used to be called the Voluntary Exclusion Program, and it was a program that was created by the General Assembly when casino gaming launched in Ohio to allow individuals to request to not be permitted to gamble at those facilities for 1 year, 5 years, or for the rest of their life. Mm-hmm. And that program has now expanded into sports gaming as well. So Ohioans, or really anyone, can sign up for this timeout program and take a timeout from gambling, take a timeout from sports betting. And
How does it time you out? Yeah. Tell me about the timeout. Yeah.
So when you sign up for the program, you're making an agreement with the commission that you're not going to engage in this activity. Mm-hmm. And also we share that information with the operators, and they are required to take steps to preclude you from accessing the gambling account. So for casinos, that can be challenging because it's a real person, you know, who's coming into a facility. But for sports gaming, it's actually been much easier that it's online because the sports gaming companies can get that information and automatically just preclude you from being able to access your account.
Do you know how many people have used it recently? I'm putting you on the spot for a number.
Yeah. So I want to say we have in the thousands, maybe around 5,000 folks that have done it. And I could follow up with you with a real number there, Amy. But this is a really robust program. It's existed for a really long time, and it has even more oomph to it now that there's sports gaming, and it's much easier to get that taken away. Now, one thing that everyone should know is once you sign up for that program, there's no take backs. So, you know, it's a very serious decision. You have to make a decision as to whether or not that is worthwhile for you, but it's certainly an option to get that taken away. There's also another program that's funded by the commission called Gamban. It's a subscription service, and the state funds it. And if you sign up for it, you can download the software onto your phone or to your computer. I think it's up to 15 different devices, and it blocks both legal and illegal gambling sites worldwide. So another option for those who may want to get this out of their home, or if they're experiencing harms related to gambling, another option there. Pause before you play, more than a bet. These are all get set before you bet. These are all different types of campaigns that the commission has worked with our state partners at the Ohio Lottery Commission and Ohio Mental Health and Addiction Services to provide education, prevention and education programming across the state and provide community level resources that we could take into schools. So Pause Before You Play is a great new initiative, and it's really geared towards gamification, video games, youth that are going to be experiencing things that are next to, adjacent to some of the feelings that you might have in gambling, in video games or on computer games. And it gives parents, educators, and these influencers of our young people resources to be able to start the talk about what is gambling, where are the risks in gambling, and being able to start having some really good open conversations about some of the challenges that they might experience down the line with gambling.
Is that with some video games where it's not real money changing hands, but you can, if you keep playing and keep playing, you earn more coins, right?
That's right. Yeah. And it has some of those same feelings. And of course, because it's not gambling and it's gaming, our youth are certainly engaging in these. Video games are ubiquitous in our culture now, but it's never too early for us to give resources to educators, to parents, to learn about gamification and some of the risks that lead into potential desired gambling behavior later.
That was Andromeda Morrison, General Counsel for the Ohio Casino Control Commission. We'll have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And coming up, we're going to talk about efforts to help those who find themselves addicted to gambling. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. Up First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Since sports betting was legalized in 2018, several states have seen increases in gambling disorder cases. While most states have seen increases in the demand for treatment related to problems caused by gambling. With an estimated 2.5 million adults in the U.S. who are addicted to gambling, states are always looking for ways to help their citizens. Joining us to discuss one of Ohio's resources is Derek Longmire, Executive Director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Welcome to All Sides, Derek.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
And I want to start by playing a segment from 60 Minutes from an interview that highlights an example of the severity of gambling addiction.
I've worked my whole life, so I got a check every week, but it would deposit right into whatever app I was using.
Were you interested in the game itself?
I am a sports fan, but as the years grew on, you become less interested in the game itself and more interested in the result.
So the legalization of sports betting has raised major concerns over its addictiveness and the problems that it can cause. Derek, can you describe what your Problem Gambling Network of Ohio does to help people?
Certainly, and thanks again for having me this morning. We really focus on two avenues. One is engaging professionals that are in the field, whether that be prevention, treatment, peer recovery supporters, to better understand what gambling addiction is and how to provide the best support to those that may be impacted by it. And then secondarily, through our Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network, we're able to provide clinical services to individuals that need care for their disordered gambling who live in areas that don't have access to local care.
Have you seen an increase in the past 2 years since Ohio legalized sports betting?
We have. We look at calls to the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline. And in the first year of legalized sports betting, we saw a 55% increase in people reaching out for help. And we've seen that within certainly within our clinical practice and then our partners throughout the state as well.
You said a 55% increase?
Correct, yes.
In the past, okay. And is it mostly related to sports betting maybe on your phone? Do you have information like that it's that specific, that it's people who get addicted to all of these apps on their phones?
That's certainly an element of it. We know that not all of the call increase is directly related to sports betting, although that there is some increase. One of the benefits of our sports betting advertising, and I'll put that benefits in air quotes, is that they're required to include either the national helpline number or the state Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline number on all advertising. So that's available and just much more prevalent within the state.
The 60 Minutes interview that I played that clip from, it referenced that, all of this is in an app. You're doing these micro bets where you can bet hundreds of times in one game. But then the Problem Gambling Helpline is a 1-800 number. Like such, it seems like such an old school way to for a problem that has become very, this digital age. Does there need to be an app to help people with problem gambling too?
That's certainly being explored, and Recover Me is an app that we actually use in Ohio and is in partnership with Ohio for Responsible Gambling, where individuals can register for Recover Me and get affirmations and other support throughout the days to really get the help that they need and support.
So when people do call the 1-800 number, if they call the number, what happens? Are they referred to like a organization like yours?
It really depends on what they're looking for. So we want to make sure that we have the right size resources for that caller. Many times the individual calling isn't the individual struggling with a gambling problem themselves, but their loved ones. So we have direct connections to our office with clinical care. We have staff that go through talking about GamFin, which is another resource that's available, and having better financial management through self-help groups like Gamblers Anonymous, through the app Recover Me. So the path to help can vary for the person and what they're looking for. And it's really our responsibility to find the right fit for those individuals. And really, if you're struggling or if you see another loved one who is struggling, there's no better time to reach out for help. You can do it through the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline, that number 800-589-9966, reaching out through our website, ohiogtn.org, or giving us a call as well.
Now, what are your thoughts? The guest we had in the first segment said that the problem is not gambling itself. They see no harm in, for fun, betting on who's going to win the game. But they say the problem comes in whenever it's all these micro bets, whenever you can bet on each individual play, that and the app, the AI technology used to create the app, does it in a way that makes it addictive. Is that where you're seeing the most problems?
As I look, and I am a Ohio certified prevention specialist, and we know that when there's greater access and availability to a product that is addictive, then more Ohioans are going to get to it and more Ohioans are going to be negatively impacted. And as we look at the mobile element of it, certainly it's more accessible in that it's in the palm of your hand 24/7. And through those microtransactions, it really does mimic a slot machine, which we also know to be heavily addictive compared to other gambling products. And it's just that repetition and kind of getting that continued betting going through, which is problematic.
This is All Sides, and we're talking about sports betting and gambling addiction with Derek Longmire, Executive Director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Now, we've heard in this hour that it is more prevalent in young males. Are you seeing that? What age group are we talking about?
18 to 45-year-old males tend to be the most at-risk population for sports betting. And as we dig that a little bit more, really 18 to 25, keeping in mind that in Ohio, the legal age to engage is 21. So we know that people under 21, young males, are engaging in a way that is not yet lawful. And we're seeing those calls to the helpline, as I mentioned, the individuals that are calling at a younger age. And they're also calling with a less time of experiencing problematic gambling. So they're calling younger and they're calling sooner, which are two things that we're certainly looking into.
And one of our previous guests also mentioned that there's been an increase in suicide. There's a big risk in this age group where they find themselves so deep in that they don't see a way out.
And gambling has the highest link to suicide over any other addiction. And that is an important message to take away, because gambling in and itself is a pretty invisible addiction. You can go a long time struggling with a gambling problem before others may pick up on it. And with that link to suicide, individuals say that there's no other way out. I've lost my house. I've lost my relationships. I've got nothing. But that's where it's so important to reach out for the help, because help and hope are available. We're here, we care, and we can get connected into the other side of this addiction.
You mentioned earlier that you hear from loved ones of someone who has the problem first. Do you help them figure out how to talk to the loved one?
That's part of the support as well, and really looking to make sure that individual that's struggling with the gambling problem gets the support they need, but also that the loved one gets the support that they need as well. And in Ohio, we're fortunate that services are available both for that gambler and for their loved one. As we look at finances, those are often wrecked in many cases, that loved one may not be really that attuned to what those finances are. And they only learn about the gambling problem because the car is being repossessed. So really helping both parties, because we know that the addiction to gambling and the problems that result are not just happening to the gambler. It's happening to their family members, to their friends, to their employers, to their communities. There's a big ripple effect.
So if someone calls the 1-800 number or contacts your organization, and they tell me about, is it that they end up with a therapist, or do they end up in like a support group? What happens after they call the number?
So they'll call the number, they'll talk to one of the specialists, and the Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline is managed by the United Way of Greater Cleveland, and they manage all those calls, not in our office. And then as they kind of talk about resources that are available, if that individual wants to have more in-depth understanding of what all those resources might look like, again, it could be individual counseling, could be group counseling, it could be through self-help groups like Gamblers Anonymous, other apps to engage in like Better Me, then you can be connected to our office, where we have specialists that are available to really go into much greater detail about the resources that are available, as well as doing that connection to a local treatment provider if it's available, or talking more about the Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network.
So the Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network, is that kind of like a big Zoom call to help? Or what? Tell me about that. Yeah.
And then that is essentially what it is. So through our network, then really exploring again what resources are available. And if it looks like getting gambling counseling is the best fit, then we have counselors on staff that run that program, and both through individual therapy and through group therapy to help move individuals along.
Have you been with your organization for longer than 2 years?
I have. I've been here for nine.
Nine. Okay. So you were there before sports betting was legalized. What were your thoughts whenever, you know, sports betting was legalized nationally about 5-6 years ago, and then Ohio took it on? Basically, each state takes it on because it's like there's money to be made and you want in on it. So what did you think whenever they added sports betting here in Ohio? Were you saying like, oh, no?
it was more of just bracing for impact. As we look at the sports betting bill, which is not a bill that I would have written. However, there are elements within the bill that I think are super critical, and really thanks to the legislature and to Casino Control Commission for really listening to us and getting some of those elements in there. But we had the largest expansion in sports betting in the nation. This is the largest expansion of gambling in the state. And we knew having that huge expansion that there's going to be a wave of individuals are going to be impacted. And looking at other states, we know that it takes about 2 years for that wave to kind of fully embrace us. And now we've just hit that 2-year mark. So through the Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network, through working with other counseling centers throughout the state, we're really prepared for that impact. And again, wanting to make sure that resources are available, whether it be for that loved one or for the individual that's struggling, anywhere you are within the state, we can support you.
Do you feel like you have enough therapists and people working for you, or are you always going to ask lawmakers for more?
it never, there's never enough in looking at the state of Ohio with 12 million people in the pockets throughout the state. So specific to the Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network and our office, we're in a good space for now, but it's really also working with those local treatment providers. And we know about, for right now, about one third of Ohio counties don't have anyone qualified within the county to treat gambling. And that's certainly something that we're working to address. Prior to sports betting, it was less than half. So we're making progress there and getting more counselors trained up.
All right. So we're out of time, but quickly just tell us the phone numbers people can call again or where to find you.
Ohio Problem Gambling Helpline, 800-589-9966. You can reach out to us through the Ohio Gambling Telehealth Network at ohiogtn.org.
All right. Thank you to Derek Longmire, Executive Director of the Problem Gambling Network of Ohio. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And this is All Sides with Amy Jurevich on 89.7 NPR News. And I want to say thank you to student producer David Stein, who produced the show today. That's all for now on 89.7 NPR News.